My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to Hanson and Hunt. Coming up on our August 2022 episode, what are your biggest challenges as a communicator? See if your answer jives with others in a new survey.
Also, the comms-related fallout from the crying CEO.
Plus, have we reached the point where a link included in a social media post is pointless?
And what some new data says about the importance of web content for B2B marketing.
Plus, a listener question about the best way for a leader or employee to share company news on LinkedIn.
Hello, I'm Eric Hanson. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Kevin Hunt. You can learn more about us at hansonandhunt.com.
If you're new to the show, each month we aim to help you with your work in PR, marketing, and communications.
Hanson and Hunt is sponsored by BrandPoint, which has been helping agencies and brands create powerful content, drive guaranteed media placements, and deliver impactful business results for 25 years. Learn more at brandpoint.com/hansonandhunt.
For this month's talking point, we'll take a closer look at some of the findings from the latest JOTW Strategic Communications Survey for 2022. It's a partnership between Ned Lundquist's Job of the Week and Frank Strong's Sword and the Script Media.
First up from the survey, communicators came up with an interesting list of the top three comms challenges, and it's evolved a bit from last year. Number one, cutting through the noise. 35% of those in the survey said cutting through the noise. Followed by number two, too many priorities. And in third this year was lack of employee experience. The top two, cutting through the noise and too many priorities, swapped spots actually from last year. But the lack of employee experience is a new challenge near the top of the list, most likely from the variety of changes in teams and companies as people come and go, and you replace them with people who are brand new to your organization. I could see why that one probably popped through. Worth pointing out, budget used to be among the top communications challenges, but it's actually slid down the list every year for the past five. Comms budgets don't show up as a problem this year until number eight, and garnered just 13% of the votes. Others in the top 10 after those top three, ever-expanding duties, which that shows up nearly every year, measuring results, not enough staffing. Again, these are the big challenges. Leaders don't understand comms. There's the budget one, not enough budget, followed by disinformation, misinformation. And then finally in that top 10, prolonged reviews and approvals is the top 10 communications challenges. So Eric, noise and clutter, it's everyone's problem. So let's start there. Are you surprised that it swapped and went to number one this year?
No, that's a big one. But what I saw was three of the top six that you just lifted off, though, hone in on comms teams being stretched too thin. So to me, that seems to be the highlight here. And the number one issue that comes through in this report after the last 2 years that we've had, it's really not surprising to anyone. But to me, that's the big takeaway. But like you said, the noise and the clutter isn't going away. The ironic part is, yes, there is more noise and clutter than ever before, but there is also more niche opportunities than ever before. You just have to know where to look and how to zero in on your audience. So to me, it's like, well, you got the, you know, cutting through the noise, huge problem. But like, well, if you're smart about your marketing, especially social media marketing, you have the tools you need to really hone in there. And by the way, if noise and clutter is such a challenge, why are we pumping out content like never before in 2022? That seems
keep
weird,
it coming.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'd be working more to focus on time, attention, and resources on less content that's really, really good versus this volume play that everyone seems to still be doing.
Yeah, a lot of factors go into that noise and clutter. You know, from a social media perspective, the channels themselves, the platforms themselves, you know, you have not, it's not just about creating and posting that content. There's so many things to even break through what the platform allows you mm-hmm. to do, is one thing. And then I think, yeah, the notion that you can't just build it and they'll come, you know, you have to continue to do the work. And, you know, I would imagine this one would constantly be in the top three for at least the foreseeable future. And of course, you mentioned too, just a workload. You know, we've seen that in some surveys that have indicated it's a struggle for some, not so much for others, but I think all in all, you know, the people that you and I talk with, a lot of them keep saying, I have too much to do. I'm in meetings too many days.
Sure. Yep.
I don't have work time. I often talk with my team about Fridays are my get stuff done days, you know, because you just get jammed up during the week. And I think workload continues to be a challenge too. Another takeaway in this survey, diversity, equity, and inclusion, DE&I, is a top comms activity. Some 59% of people in this survey said their organization will place a greater emphasis on DE&I activity this year. It was followed in the survey by these things, thought leadership, data and analytics, storytelling, comms strategy, measurement, internal comms, and environmental and social governance, ESG programs. So again, these are the top comms activities led by DE&I. What do you think of these?
Well, there's a pretty big gap between DE&I and the rest. You mentioned DE&I was at 59%, right? And then the next closest was thought leadership at 49%, and everything else was huddled right around that. So to me, though, the key for the DE&I work at this point is all about results and action. So I think we're past the point at which communications is key with that. It's really now we're in this gap where it's like, well, we've had 2 years since George Floyd's murder. Right. And it feels like we're at action point. Like, okay, what has, like, you know, some of these companies that threw down these gauntlets, what's happened since then? So maybe it is communications in the way of like demonstrating the actions that they've taken and some of the progress that some of these companies have made. But that's probably the story at this point with the DE&I things, I would think.
Yeah, I think.
Would you agree with that?
I would. And yeah, you've got the action piece of it, especially if you're in a community that has had, you know, incidents that have popped up in the news. But there's also from a just pure diversity or inclusion aspect, like what does your workforce look like? And what can you do as a communicator to demonstrate to the workforce and externally of what type of people are, you know, make up your organization? So I think a lot of comms groups and HR teams are looking at, you know, what are you communicating internally about your efforts to be a more inclusive organization, and what are you showing the world externally what you're doing? And, you know, companies, organizations all over the map in terms of the, you know, their diversity initiatives and what their work force looks like, but there are probably a host of other communications programs that go along with, you know, just taking apart DE&I. What does that mean to your organization? Might mean what somebody over here is doing is very different from another organization, depending on where they're at on the spectrum, I think. Mm-hmm. All right. The final part of the survey that we want to highlight is a push toward a growing mix of internal and external resources for communications and marketing. About 1 in 3 communicators in this survey said they're taking more comms work in-house. Well, 22% say they're taking less work in-house. However, 36% also said they will send more work to outside resources such as agencies and freelancers. Execution, or a quote, extra pair of hands, is the top reason that folks said they hired an agency. It's the only choice with a majority, 53% of the votes, needing that extra pair of hands. Agencies and freelancers were asked separately in the survey about the potential for new business for them this year, and 70% said new business would actually increase or increase significantly. So, Eric, does this make sense to you when you think about your own business outlook as someone who is in this area?
Yeah, I always like to say that when times are good, it's a good time to be a consultant, and when times are bad, it's also a good time to be a consultant.
There you go. Good for business.
So it doesn't surprise me. It makes sense. The recession usually means that people may or organizations may lay off team members, and the work doesn't stop, as we know. So then that's where companies will usually reach out to people like me for arms and legs, like the report said. So that meshes up with what I'm hearing and seeing. And again, I think this will be a good thing for agencies too, because as those in-house teams retract, again, that work still needs to get done, whether it's by a solo or an agency partner. And especially with social media diversifying, it's like, unfortunately, there's more needs than ever before. And someone needs to get the work done. And as you know, budget is easier to come by sometimes than headcount once you lose it. So that usually adds up to good news for consultants and agency partners. I will tell you on the social side that over the last few years, there has been a trend. You mentioned that stat at the beginning where it talks about in-housing. That's for sure happened on the social side, I feel like. Like, we went through this growth phase where everyone kind of staffed up on the social side, and now they're starting to take back a lot of that work that agencies were gobbling up 5, 6, 7 years ago. So that is definitely a trend. It's nice to see it on the PR side too, but on the social side, it was inevitable because it was only a matter of time before teams got talent that could do some of this work, whereas agencies had the talent, I feel like, in the early years of social. Now it's just kind of leveling off, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a good point. In fact, I'm doing that myself, you know, created a social media specialist role and have that person starting here soon. So mm-hmm. taking back some of that from an agency perspective is part of that. I think this overall point of this survey also speaks to, you kind of hinted at it as well, like if mm-hmm. departments are suddenly, it's harder to hire, it's harder to fill some of these roles. So clearly looking for that extra pair of hands. And again, I'm not an expert on the economy, never pretend to be one. But this is probably going to be around for a long time. We just talked about workload is what it is. If you don't have the bodies to do what the leaders still want you to do, then in some cases you have no choice but to go outside for some of this freelance work and agency work to support that. So until we can solve, you know, this, the headcount losing folks off your team and not being able to maybe fill those spots as quickly as you had in the past, I think that's an opportunity too. All right, lots in the survey. We have a link in our show notes. This is always good, so appreciate Frank sharing this, and we always spot it when he does. So hat tip to you, Frank Strong. A link again is in the full survey is in our show notes, so go ahead and check that out. And we have a quick audio comment from a listener who has some interesting perspective about the state of recruiting for marketing roles right now, as we were just talking about, especially for remote or hybrid positions.
Hi, Eric and Kevin. This is Elizabeth Laca, a Minnesota-based marketing recruiter. I wanted to leave you a comment about one of the biggest trends I see in recruiting, which is candidates seeking a flexible working environment. Most of my clients have returned to hybrid, in which some time in the office is required, and several have gone fully remote. While the lure of fully remote is there for many job seekers, I recommend first asking yourself this key question. If I have a training question, am I confident asking a team member or leader to meet me in person and or ask a potential employer, would they take time and resources to train me in person if needed? I've interviewed numerous candidates who joined a fully remote organization, never fully got up to speed, and are frustrated in their role as a result. I'd like to finish by sharing a helpful resource for job seekers. Every week, Casey Tilley and I share an email featuring marketing career openings in Minnesota. This free list also includes remote roles and internships. I invite you to follow and check out my LinkedIn post for more information on how to sign up. Thanks.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Good topic. Recruiting certainly is a challenge, to say the least. So, Eric, what do you think of her comment?
Well, I'm in a weird position because I don't hire, and Elizabeth is the expert in Casey as online. But I think the comment about the training is interesting to me. Like, if I was a young, I think about my students at St. Thomas, and when they're launching into jobs now. And I got to imagine that's a huge challenge, right? If you're a kid coming out of school and you're like, let's say you're on a social media team and you have questions about Facebook advertising platforms, like, well, you need to be trained on that, or you need a senior person to hold your hand a little bit for the first few times. And like, that's really hard to do in your remote. So I can see why Elizabeth's suggesting people go hybrid. That's a big part of why I would second that. I think the young people should be probably more in person than the old people should be, because they need that support at a young age versus like people like you and I. I mean, we've kind of, we need support too. It's just different. But that in-person support at a young age would be critical, I would think.
Yeah, and I wonder what percentage of those that are looking to make a move, or whether it's that first job, are truly thinking, well, this is my time to go full remote. You know, what types of people are looking for those roles, and where are those roles? Not just here mm-hmm. in Minnesota, as Elizabeth and her expertise is, as you heard, with the resources that you can find mm-hmm. from her. But I would think anywhere, for wherever our listeners are, all over the world, you know, what percent is really fully in that remote bucket? And I think that's why hybrid is more important, so you can have some FaceTime when it comes to those training opportunities, when it comes to just relating to colleagues and coworkers and getting the work done.
One thing about culture too, that's the other big X factor, is when I was working, I always thought one of the biggest benefits to working in an office was like you develop, especially again, younger age is even more meaningful, is like you develop, like everyone would say, like a best friend at work, right? Well, you're not going to develop a best friend at work if you're remote all the time. That's going to be very tough to do, right? So it's not only the culture for the organization, it's culture for the employee too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I would think that's an added benefit to the hybrid situation.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Do you have a comment for us about our talking point this month, or maybe an idea for a future topic or something else? Let us know. Just go to hansonandhunt.com and look for our contact form, or even better, just click on that microphone icon and record it as an audio clip.
All right. Up next, there's no crying on LinkedIn, or is there?
And later, should a leader share a company post on social or post the news themselves? Is there a right approach?
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Okay, we had several options for our spotlight this month, but in the end, our choice was one we just couldn't resist. If this is new to you, Braden Walacki, who runs the marketing agency Hypersocial, shared a photo on LinkedIn earlier this month showing him crying after announcing layoffs at his agency. Of course, that post blew up with people saying it was authentic and people saying it was inappropriate. Some LinkedIn users mocked him and his post, calling him, quote, out of touch and cringeworthy, or suggested that he should focus on helping his former employees rather than how the situation had affected him. It's very complicated, and what he says about why he reached that decision, you can certainly go find that background. But Walacki followed up his original message with a post saying, quote, hey, everyone, yes, I am the crying CEO. No, my intent was not to make it about me or victimize myself. I'm sorry it came across that way. So I give him credit for saying that, because there was that percentage of the folks who saw that post that felt like that. But I don't know. I'll give you my take in a second. I want to hear you. So is there any room for a CEO to cry on social media?
I think yes. I was kind of in the camp of defending him a little bit until he doubled down and then tripled down and then quit. He's made it worse the last couple of days. But until that point, I was kind of in the camp defending him a little
bit. Is a Kleenex sponsorship in his future?
Clearly, the photo was not a great idea, obviously. Yeah. And the tone of his post was a little off. But to your point about, is there room for CEOs to cry on social media? I think yes. And I don't think this one example should you know, hold people like us back from counseling our executive partners on like being more authentic online. Like this was a bad example. Like he, like this tone was off. The photo was off, obviously. Bad example, right? But think about all the posts like Sarah Blakely has made. Think about the posts Jeff Martha, CEO of Medtronic, has made. Like there's numerous other examples out there of authenticity that's done well and that has worked really well. This was not a great example. So, but it doesn't mean it's like, I saw a bunch of posts about like, well, now it's going to be tougher for us to coach executive partners on, you know, being more authentic online. And I was like, well, it's one example though. What about all right. the other ones? So I think it's a balancing act. But that was my big takeaway. So what did you think about this?
You think
he's an imposter?
I don't want to see a crying CEO on LinkedIn. I just don't. And, you know, I haven't followed all the back and forth and who loves this. So just this is my raw, honest opinion. I don't think I need to see this. I don't think anybody needs to see it. Even if this guy is the most sensitive, greatest person in the world, the reaction is always going to be from the people who don't know that he's the greatest, most honest person in the world, that what is this clown doing? So I don't know that there's an upside. I don't know that there's an upside when the masses who don't know your CEO and don't know you see this and react to it. I think it does more harm than good. I would much rather see somebody, you know, write from the heart, you know, this was really tough on me. This is, you know, this hardest thing I've ever done. And like I would take that over anything else.
I think that's the sad thing here because I think that was his intent.
Yeah.
I don't know him. Who knows, right? Maybe it wasn't. But reading between the lines, that seems like that was his intent. The tone was a little bit off and the picture just ruined everything, obviously. But I think that's what he wanted to do. It's just like, oh, dude, like the picture. And then stop doubling down. Like he just keeps coming and it's like, oh, man. I have a friend named Rachel Kay who runs an agency out in San Diego. And she said, I'll give you a free piece of social media advice. Get off social media. That was her advice. Wow. I thought that was funny after like 4 days.
That's pretty good. So. Yeah. Well, everyone knows his agency name now, don't they?
Good for awareness, that's for sure.
Good awareness in the end.
For better or for worse.
Would you want to hire the agency with the crying CEO? Oh, that was a good one. I'm glad we included that one.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, it's time for a quick news, a quick take segment, a few more recent comms and marketing stories we think should interest you.
Yes. First up this month, it's a post from Axios. Sarah Fisher wrote about how Gen Z is shaping a, quote, new social media era. Not new info to our listeners here, but it's good talkers. She points to Pew Research Center data that says Gen Z, ages 18 to 29, is the only generation showing a decline in the use of the primary social media platforms in the last 2 years, except for TikTok. Fisher writes that, quote, the social hierarchies created by decades of public like counts and the noise level generated by clickbait posts and engagement lures have worn on Gen Z, and constant pivots by social media giants have eroded younger users' trust. Seen a lot of that lately, haven't we? These constant pivots. Instead, she says they're seeking out very smaller apps, each of which serves a distinct function. Twitch for live streaming, gaming, of course, Discord, private group chats, and the list goes on and on. Fisher says younger users have become much more deliberate about how they present themselves online, forcing social giants to become far less social. So Eric, as Fisher says, is what's happening with Gen Z a sign of the end of social media as we've known it, or just that consumers are looking for different ways to relate to one another?
Well, I think from a user standpoint, I don't think this is the end. Far from it. But I do think the users, especially the Gen Z that she's alluding to, are starting to get smarter about how they use all the different platforms. So like, if you think about BeReal's ascension recently, like number one in the App Store, the Apple App Store, at least.
You're a big user, I know.
I'm a big user, right? Yeah. I'm starting to play around with it, really just because my kids are on it. But that's a perfect example, right? Like BeReal is the whole thing is like it's like your close friends. It's like kind of like visual texting in a way. And it's supposed to be super authentic. So it's like a point in time, one point in time during your day. That's getting back to like the essence of social media. And that's why these young people are using it. I think it seems like, so from the user standpoint, I don't think social media is going away, but it's definitely changing and the users get more savvy. From the marketing standpoint, I think it's important to really hone on what platforms your customers are using and where they're spending time, because it's not just Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Look at the Pew data, right? They had Snapchat in there. You just mentioned Discord, Reddit, WhatsApp. Those are all in the top 10 list. Like, how many brands are using some of those? Like, not many. So, like, and a I keep beating this drum all the time, but like, it's all about focus. Like, you don't have to be on all the primary social media platforms. Like, if Twitter's not working for you, don't use it. Mm-hmm. Like, just, we've talked about this on the show before. Yeah. Facebook's not working for you anymore. Don't use it. Like, but zero in on the ones that are working. And if you're targeting like young people, we know what platforms the young people are hanging out on, right? So like, find those. But I think it's just going to be a question of focus the next few years more than anything.
Yeah. Well, two things. If there's crying on Be Real, I don't want to be there. And the second thing, isn't it funny to see the Facebook continued decline in the, well, even from age 15 on,
right?
You know,
oh yeah,
like right. the planning and the freak out that they must be in for the last few years continues, because if you don't have Gen Z, better have another plan for the Gen X and the boomers.
It's all over.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, next quick news item to throw at you is from Marketing Charts about the importance of content for B2B buyers. The article says B2B marketers are increasing their spending on content this year, and that move appears to be made with good reason. A recent study from Demand Gen Report and Demand Base finds that 84% of buyers surveyed agreed that a winning vendor's content has had a significant impact on their buying decision. Buyers were asked to select their top five reasons for choosing the winning vendor. The top response was that the winner demonstrated a stronger knowledge of the buyer's company and its needs, and the role of content played into several of the next few reasons, including 62% pointed to the provision of higher quality content. The article says top resource that informs buyers about a solution is web search. That's why SEO matters, folks. The author says vendor websites need to make sure they provide easy access to content that speaks directly to their company, easy access to pricing and competitive information, and content that speaks directly to and demonstrates expertise around the needs of their industry.
So I'm going to be using this research for a long time, because it speaks directly to the value of content marketing, but also the notion of creating and providing free, helpful content that's easy to find on your site. That's what you just read about on the list of what people want, right? So this whole conversation about gated content, it's like, yes, it can work in spots, but like, what did we see in the survey? It was all free, useful content, right? Like, that's what people want. They don't, well, I'm not going to, with privacy concerns too, like, I don't want to give you my data. Like, that's going to become harder to do. So this is great research for an argument that I've been trying to build for years with B2B brands.
Right. It's all about search. What are the questions and the things that people are looking for? And does your website have the content that is going to meet that need? It's pretty simple. Pretty simple. All right. Our final piece of quick news is a good talker about zero-click content. It's from Amanda Natividad at Spark Toro. We've been advocating about this as well for several years. Eric, you've also pointed this out recently on LinkedIn and in your email newsletter that it's getting harder to get people to click a link shared in a social post. So you need zero-click content. Why? Because many of the platforms obviously prefer that. They don't want people to leave. And this post shares a chart of the major web and social platforms that shows which ones link to content, which ones benefit from a zero-click approach. It then makes a case for creating zero-click content and offers some ideas to turn the highlights of, say, a blog post or other info into valuable and standalone insights for social. The ideas include content native to each platform. So a Twitter thread, a LinkedIn post, a 60-second TikTok that goes right to the how-to, maybe a shorter YouTube clip, not your whole video that you produced. Things that are easily consumed by anyone scrolling their feed, yet still provides value to the creator. Eric, this post also points out the dilemma here that creators, and really organizations of all kinds, need to adjust. If we haven't already, what we care about for measurement. So the post suggests optimizing impressions and engagement over page views. Build goodwill from your audience as a provider of interesting and helpful info, and maybe they'll also click your link to see more, but don't count on it. Good stuff in this article. So why aren't many organizations still not adopting a zero-click content approach?
I think it's a few things. Number one, it's a habit. We've been doing this for so long. It's just kind of built into a habit for many of us. But partly, I think it's a lead factor. Getting users to our websites means that we're much closer to that sale or that lead, and that's where so much of the attention is, as we've talked about. And they're ignoring the rest of the funnel. So I think this will actually be a trend this year, actually, where the people start to realize this. There's more talk about this recently, and I do think people will get smarter about it because the numbers don't lie. I mean, the platforms are telling us they don't want you to leave the platform. And what I've found in the audits I've done over the last few years is like most of the people that have links in their content, if you look at the Google Analytics, they're not getting a lot of traffic from social. So unless they're paying for it. So organic social, the organic social traffic is minimal. So like, well, if the platforms don't want you to leave and your stats are telling you your customers don't want you to leave or aren't leaving, then what's the point? You know, you really have nowhere to go. So I think people will start to realize that, I think, this year, and you'll see this change a little bit in the months ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously watching it for several years as somebody who has overseen blogs and certainly, you know, cared about the page view, but you got to that certain point where it's like, well, we can't care about that page view as much. Again, it comes back to search, like, right, what are we writing about, mm-hmm, and posting about that gets, yep, people there in other ways, mm-hmm, in addition to how are we showing up on social? How are we taking, you know, some of these practices of zero click content? I will say, mm-hmm, a little mini rant for you. The Twitter thread, I can see the pros and the cons. Yep. It is showing up every dang day that I'm looking at
Twitter. Those are really popular now.
And yeah, I don't know that I'm a fan of the overuse of the Twitter thread.
I know. When they get to be like 30, I totally agree. Like, I was a guy I followed at the beginning of COVID called Andy Slavitt, and a lot of people know him. And he was one of the first guys to really use that to update people on COVID early. And it was very useful because, like, I had tons of questions about COVID like everyone else did. But then he never altered his approach. So now he's still doing these Twitter threads that are like 30 tweets long. And it's like, dude, like, I don't want to click through 30 of these things to get to your point. Like, I agree. It's just, it's a little overuse, right? Like, just get to the point a little bit quicker.
I don't know. I'm seeing it like every night, you know, grab the phone, like, oh my God, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole now. Where was I? Am I back in the main feed? Where am I? Right. Oh no, yes. I'm still in this guy's thread and all the comments to it. Yeah. I see both sides. I, you know, as an idea for zero click content, sure, try it out, test it out for your organization, but the overuse, I think, is
keep it to a minimal.
We're very close to that. Yeah. So I wanted to throw that at you.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that, let's move on to our Q&A segment. We have an audio question this month.
Yeah, we do. It's from a friend and former colleague of mine in my TV news days, Amy Leger, who is now on the agency side. So let's have a listen.
Hi, guys. I have a two-part question that's kind of a chicken or the egg scenario. So at my company, we've been having discussions about what amplifies a brand more on LinkedIn. Is it publishing a post on a company page and then having the CEO and other employees share it? Or is it best to have the CEO or someone else within the C-suite publish a company-related post on their page first and then the company page shares it? The discussion we're having is that LinkedIn is ultimately a people-centric platform, not a company-centric platform. So I'm wondering your thoughts on that. And then my second question has to do with, if the idea is to always share company-related posts on the CEO or C-suite pages first, then why would anyone put their company page on LinkedIn for constant maintenance? It just seems like more work. And instead, we could just send them to their website.
Thanks a lot, Amy. Really appreciate you sending that in. I'll tackle this one first. This is a topic that comes up all the time in my work, and it's a good question. This is a nuanced issue, but one quick answer I can give off the top is yes, I do believe you should have a company page on LinkedIn. You need a home base for your brand on LinkedIn. Sure, as you alluded to, Amy, individuals have more clout on LinkedIn right now, for sure. But a page on LinkedIn is kind of like having a website on the internet. Like, you need a place where people can find you and learn more about your company, whether that's the products and services you offer or the employer brand situation. Like, I think you have to have that. So I don't think that's going anywhere. Now, the other topic here is a bit more nuanced. And in the research I've done, when execs and leaders share company posts on LinkedIn, the results have been awful. So I have done a lot of research around that. It's not every brand, it's not every executive, but that's what I've seen, especially recently. On the flip side, when executives or company leaders share original content from their accounts, that content is usually crushing. So I have some slides in a trend presentation I give that show that, where it's like, here are the five last shares they have and the engagement numbers, and here are the five most recent original content shares or posts they have and the engagement numbers there. And it's just not even close. So generally speaking, I wouldn't advocate for executives sharing corporate posts, generally speaking. What I usually suggest is just to use the same content in two different ways, right? In your company page, the content would have more of a corporate voice, but the execs could post original posts using the same content, but in a more personal way. So again, think back to your quick news item above about links. Be sure, try not to do the storytelling right in the post. Don't attempt to drive them off the platform too. So that's my take. Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, well said. I would just add, yes, you should have a company page because employer brand, It's a different and broader audience than the individual leaders. It really helps reinforce who your organization is, what they do, what they stand for. And I agree that generally speaking, execs should not share company posts. Instead, share that in their own way. But in my experience, the company page always outperforms the leader post in engagement. A little different, maybe, no matter who posts first or if it's a share. That is, assuming the company has a good following. So that could be different, you know, depending on the size of an organization or what it looks like. But the only time I would see the leader's post outperform the company page post with the same news, even if it's done a different way, was if the leader was already very connected and active on LinkedIn. This is not somebody who's brand new to LinkedIn. So something to think about, maybe look for a mix at first until if somebody's brand new to LinkedIn to kind of build that up. I did do a quick review of some of the leaders that my team supported over the last few years at General Mills, and only a few of those exec shares of company posts performed as good as just an executive's average, you know, individual share on their own. So again, not necessarily sharing the company post. I would still lean toward, as you said, the exec sharing it on their own. But test it out for yourself. I do think there's a mix of sharing the posts with a comment and track that. And keep in mind that the exec's audience begins with their own connections, but that the post will get served up to that broader audience, depending on the engagement that it gets. And another note on employee advocacy programs that I've managed, I encourage employees just to be active in any way. So whether they want to share the company post with a little bit of comment or post on their own, I didn't really care in those situations because it all helps to show pride in the company. And by the way, for Amy and for others, I also posed this question to someone in my network whose sole job, dream job, in fact, is that his team at a large tech company is executive social media activity. I'm really jealous of him and his role and his team. But he was even more adamant, saying, never have an exec share a company post. So there you go.
Even
a few different opinions there, Amy. And I hope that was helpful for you and for others. Really appreciate you sending that question in. Okay, do what Amy did. Send us an audio clip. Super easy. Just click that microphone icon at the bottom of hansonandhunt.com. Or, of course, you can send it in via our contact form or just find us on social. That's fine, too. And we may choose your question for next month's show. All right, before we go, one more topic to quickly get into. Eric, you were just at the Florida Public Relations Association annual conference in super hot Orlando. Curious, though, what seemed to be the topics that were top of mind down there?
The top of mind topic from you was hot, as you alluded to. So don't go to Florida in August. That's
I warned
I
you. I warned you.
You tried to warn me. Yeah, a couple of the topics I thought that came through. I didn't go to all the sessions because it was part work for me and part vacation. My family was with me. But number one, the importance of data and understanding how to harness it for your company and clients. Shanali Burke, who has been a longtime blogger and influencer type person in our world, had a great keynote on that topic, giving many examples. So I thought that was interesting, especially for the PR audience. And then also there's a really interesting topic or a session I went to on accessibility with social media and why we need more accessibility when it comes to social media. So a great presentation by this woman named Alexa Heinrich on how to make your content more accessible for people with disabilities. That was really interesting. So I would encourage you to go. There's a website she has created called accessiblesocial.com. If you're interested in that, really pretty fascinating stuff and something I've never thought of before, actually. So that was probably the most interesting one I went to.
So I assume captioning, some of those things, what are some other things that
subtitles. I had the parts, she talked a lot about YouTube and captions, stuff like that. But the differences between the platforms and how some of them really cater to accessibility issues and some don't. And,
some don't
you
make
know
it
what
easy.
I mean? She's kind of barking, banging the door saying, what are you guys doing? Like, so she's kind of taken up the mantle for this. And I think that's admirable in itself, you know?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn makes it easy. You can upload the files right with the video. Yep. Twitter, not so much. I'm not sure about Facebook. It's been a while since I've done that. But yeah, I think for me, even as someone who is scrolling the feed, I need to see captions. Like I'm not going to turn on the volume from just a user experience point of view, not to mention the accessibility. So it is something that my team thinks about a lot with our web platforms. But also the social content too. So I'm glad that that you called that out. That's worth checking out her resources there too.
It's a big one. She said she had talked to her afterwards. She said she spoke like already this year. God, someone godly. I can't remember the number. It's a huge amount of times. You know. So like I was like, you're going to be in demand because this is I would think that's a hot topic right now, and there's not a lot of people talking about it.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this episode of the show up for now.
Yeah, check out our show notes for more info. Again, we do thank you for spending time with us, as always.
We hope our show is helpful to you and your work. Please spread the word about it if you would.
Yeah, and join us again next month.